wants to come back and say, no, I was sober and just the stupidest, most bigoted son of a bitch ever to confess on the bench, okay, I'll take that. But if I were him, I'd run to drunk. You know what I mean?
Wow. So the situation we have now is Jerry Henry in jail. I take it you're not at the moment rushing to get another writ of habeas corpus together or take it to the to Sixth Circuit, as you suggested would be the thing that had you the time or energy or resources you might have done last time.
Well, and I would do it this time were it not for the fact that it would be a moot issue. He is, because he was arrested on a warrant, I understand he'll be in front of the court first thing Monday. Secondly, at the time he was arrested, he did not have an attorney. 2 weeks ago, but now he's got an attorney, so I definitely don't have standing. Jakubowski was notified at 4:30. I called the public defender's office and notified them that he had been arrested and was in jail on $100,000 bail. Asked her to call me. At 4:45, I called, and she had picked up her messages and was gone for the day.
Well, she probably had some important drinking to do, perhaps.
Well,
I'm sorry, I don't mean to accuse a public defender of being an alcoholic. Let us say she simply had other affairs to attend to that didn't involve her job, which she apparently was neglecting with respect to her client.
Well, either she picked up the messages and didn't read them,
mm-hmm.
or she picked up the messages and knew that he was in jail and understood and appreciated it, which is a level of collusion that I would hardly allege, but it's, you know, when you speculate, you get to speculate anywhere you want. I have no idea. I can just tell you that from my perspective, and certainly from Jerry's, disappointment is high on the list of feelings about what her role in this.
Didn't I warn you about her?
I think you have, and yeah. I sat down there and watched her fight for a woman that was being harassed because she kept too many cats in her Volkswagen van.
I remember you told me, and I was pleased to hear that you'd done that, but
I watched her fight that, and I just thought, you know, what a dedicated young woman, you know,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm really not prepared to let go of that, but I do have called to reevaluate my assessment, if you get my drift.
Right, I'm not trying to trash any particular public defender, but I feel that individuals have to be responsible for their acts and omissions in these positions of relative power. I know the public defender's office probably doesn't have the power of the district attorney's office, but they have some power. They have more power than you and I in these circumstances.
Well, it is, if it's your contention that she most certainly could have done something to have liberated Mr. Henry from jail on Friday, if in fact this proves to be a failure to appear allegation and he was supposed to be scheduled and she was the one who didn't make the hearing or notify her client and so on, I would say that her failure at that level demonstrates a certain lack of responsibility that's unacceptable. Yeah.
Right. Of course, now the question is, the chill you felt that when you heard of the second $100,000 warrant going out, I think is one that is what we call a reasonable reaction to the sight of authority gone mad.
Well, there's no question that the sheriff's office, with the guys that are running interference for the sheriff's office right now is county council, Dwight Herr and company. And people need to start looking at this unelected official and how much power he wields in this county. As the defender of all this behavior, you know, he's the lawyer that goes into court, denies that they did anything, and even if they did it, they're immune. He pretty much sets the criteria under which they operate. And so when you see these county officials running amok, and they don't seem to give a damn that they're running amok, it's because they have been assured or directed, and it's hard to know how that works because that's attorney-client privilege, but they've got some sort of confidence that they're going to be able to get away with this crap. That sergeant, when he took Jerry's car, has got to believe that he didn't put his house on the line to do that. And the only people that would lead him to believe that would have to be county council. And I know from personal experience that they are involved as an office in a whole bunch of real questionable stuff. These restraining orders against Mr. Henry, the one they got against me, county council has been hands-on involved, and hell, they showed up when I tried to get a modification of that restraining order on me because they were abusing the hell out of it and hauling me off to jail. County council showed up to sitting right there with Gottschalk's attorney.
We're talking, of course, about the same scene, the same cast, the same issues around the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, where you, as a friend of Jerry Henry's, and I would also assume a friend of young people who don't want to be harassed at the shopping center, your very presence had become something that the Gottschalk's merchants, Claudia Easterby, who is, I guess, one of the prime suspects, or I should say culprits in this case.
She is the resident empowered bitch.
She's the one of the managers at, the Gottschalk's in Rancho Del Mar. We put through a call to her to tell her that we were discussing this issue on air, I guess it was a week or two ago, and that if she wanted to participate or if she wanted to deny any of the allegations that have been made about her engaging in this clear vendetta against Jerry Henry, and I guess against you as well, that she had an opportunity to speak out. We wanted to give her equal time. We never heard back from her. So.
Well, what a surprise.
Yeah.
But, and you know, there's another one. Those guys, because of the amount of advertising dollars that they invest in the media in this area, people all the time ask me why we don't hit the major media with this stuff. And it's real simple. Every time you read a Gottschalk's ad in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, that's why you don't read about the other stuff in the Sentinel. Every time you see a Gottschalk's ad on CBS, NBC, ABC, that's why you don't see on those news stations what's being done to Jerry Henry at that shopping center.
A special badge of shame, by the way, to be presented to reporter Daryl Cole of the Santa Cruz Sentinel, who talked to me, talked to you. We offered him documentation of the last $100,000 misunderstanding, or what the bail that went out for Jerry Henry. He promised us that something would appear in the Sentinel, and of course, not a word, not a syllable, not
a peep. Robert, if you understood how many dollars they rely on from Gottschalk's advertising every year, you would understand exactly why it works the way that it does. That's one of the really down and disturbing sides of capitalism. You know, as much as I love this form of government, the free enterprise system does leave it to where if you buy enough advertising, you own the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been insulated. We got one run at them a couple of years ago in the Pajaronia. And the next day they came out demonizing every one of us, you know. And it was, I know exactly what happened. Gottschalk's called up, canceled all their advertising. The salesman for the Pajaronia ran to the editor. Look at all the money we're going to lose. We got to do something. Oh my, oh my. And the next day, here come out a virtual retraction of what they'd written the day before, which was all true.
What was the issue at that point?
Oh, that was one of his first arrests. This harassment was early and often down there.
Now, how long has Jerry been under siege at the Aptos Rancho?
4 years.
And so Gottschalk's has been doing its level best to systematically deny basic civil rights to him, and I suppose to some extent to you, not to mention the young people in that area, for that period of time?
Well, yeah, that's an oversimplification. One of the things that's going to be happening in the next couple of months, it's going to take a while to do because it's a real comprehensive thing, but we're working on, for a community TV, we're going to do a one-hour documentary that's going to deal with this thing from beginning to end. Or at least from beginning to whatever it is at the time that we present the document, the documentary, and so all these details are we're going to try to get those in that 1 hour. Young kid by the name of Bill Army he's a producer down there at Community TV, and he and I and Joel Coppa are going to get together and put this documentary together so that it will cover this, and at least if nowhere else, people will have a chance to find out about it. I mean. You do an excellent job both on the radio and with the shit sheet. We've had our interview on your station, on your show down at Community TV, and these have all been good hits. They don't reach the market that the advertised supported media would reach, but we do get through. So we're going to run this one-hour documentary, and that should pull all this stuff together in 60 minutes so that people can look at it and decide, you know, for themselves what the hell's going on.
For those who want to get information immediately and can't wait for this documentary, have you written something up that summarizes the history of this situation?
Yeah, in various forms, but no, nothing comprehensive because it's just too big, man. You cannot imagine. You cannot imagine. I mean, Jerry talks about having had encounters with over 300 police in the last 4 years, and I don't doubt that number at all. I realize there's only 150 deputies, but, you know, some of them he's seen many times, and he's suffered just about everything short of physical abuse that you can suffer. No, they have not taken him out in the woods and clubbed him senseless, but they certainly threatened to, you know, and when you're dealing with a disabled guy, that's sort of low blow stuff, you know. No, it's terrible. It's probably on the list of the greatest shames that this county has ever promoted and endorsed with their tax dollars.
We're listening to Richard Quigley. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides for all you listeners who just tuned in, 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, talking about the $100,000 arrest and incarceration of Jerry Henry for the crime of protesting peacefully and legally his exclusion from various businesses.
Oh yeah, that's
in Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center.
Yeah, that's the other thing that's really exciting, is that as they're coming with these charges, they're charging him with 602.1, which is the catch-all, intentional interference with a business. But boy, they stretch that thing. It's a convoluted charge at best, the way they're bringing it. Disturbing the peace, which is, again, when I get to the end of this sentence, will make even less sense than it does now. And then, of course, abating a public nuisance charge, which is a charge that if you can't make the other two, you do that one. So why they add that when they do make the other two, I don't know. And what it's all about is they are challenging his right to protest being niggered by those merchants in the sheriff's office down there in the shopping center. And that's just the plain flat truth of it. His defense is clearly self-defense, First Amendment protected right to protest. I mean, if you walk up and poke somebody and they holler, "Hey, ouch," and then you arrest him for hollering about being poked, you know, everybody can figure out right away, well, that's ridiculous. But that's exactly what's going on.
Right. Well, you know, the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with that concerns civil rights for homeless people, that has been looking at downtown businesses in Santa Cruz on Pacific Avenue and trying to get them to deal with the sleeping ban and to try to get them to take a more compassionate stance toward the local code that makes it illegal for people to sleep at night. But I think another item on the agenda for our next HUF meeting is going to be whether to move our concern out to Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center and set up a table or whatever we need to set up there that essentially begins to inform the public of the kind of abuses that are going on against individuals who are acting as helpers to young and homeless people like Jerry Henry.
Well, it seems that these guys are clear that the way that you communicate with people is through dollars, because that's how they keep the lid on everything in the media. So I think that you'll find that if you're going to do that, there is a plan already underway to hit the area heavily with information about what's been going on down there and offers perhaps some alternative places to shop. Probably within days of Thanksgiving, since that's the most businesses keep their business going 11 months of the year so that they can capitalize on this Christmas insanity from Thanksgiving to Christmas.
So you're saying that some of Jerry Henry's compatriots and some of his beneficiaries, I would say, young people, are preparing to picket and petition during the Thanksgiving Christmas season?
Well, there's a couple of things that are going to be tested. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. And there's a couple of things that are going to be tested. One of them is that they've always done this little claim that the area down there is private property, although they've learned in the last 4 years that it's really not. But the area, particularly directly in front of the sheriff's office, which is located exactly next door to Gottschalk's, the area in front of the sheriff's office has got to be, for lack of a better description, if I may borrow from Ridgemont High, double, triple public.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there is a plan in the works to put a table directly in front of the sheriff's office the day after Thanksgiving and maintain that table up till the Christmas holiday, that will have such things as all special sales catalogs from competing businesses, credit card applications for competing businesses, and flyers explaining why this protest is necessary and so on. So yeah, I think you can look forward to a rather comprehensive demonstration against what's been going on down there for the last several years.
And of course, I guess at 8:15 tomorrow morning, Jerry Henry in his orange jumpsuit will be trudging into one of the superior courts down at 701 Ocean.
Well, you know, don't know. They say that when you're arrested on a warrant, you appear on Monday morning. When you're arrested without a warrant, you appear on Tuesday morning. When you're arrested on Friday. So the way to find that out, I guess, is to go down there. We don't have any direct knowledge that he's scheduled for a hearing at all. But I'm certainly going to be down there, and I'll be looking for Ms. Jakubowski to see what's going on. It may be that I'll end up before the day's over heading over to the 6th because he may have no representation.
Right. Well, Richard Quigley, thank you very much for taking half an hour to run this by us again. And I think, you know, may seem to some listeners we're harping on one note or taking up too much time or maybe not taking enough musical breaks. But I'll tell you, this issue is an important one, and there's a man who is in jail at the moment, and to my mind, completely illegally imprisoned. And I think that that has to be, to some extent, in our awareness. And you've helped, I think, to bring it more into focus.
Well, there's no question that he's a political prisoner, and my feeling is that although your audience may want to sit around and listen to music rather than to deal with these facts, the fact of the matter is Mr. Henry is not available to listen to anything on this radio station. He's in jail. We're on the outside.
Or as they used to say, and they said in the last protest regarding Steve Argue, as he was He himself, of course, will be going to jail for probably up to, well, it could be up to 4 years, probably less, considerably less. But, you know, we're hopefully, if you're in there for us, we're out here for you. And we'll see just how much that's true. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, sir.
Good to hear you.
Fight the good fight.
All right.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
In the morning we built the city.
In the afternoon walked through its streets.
Evening saw us leaving.
We wandered through our days as if they would never end. All of us imagined we had endless time to spend. We hardly saw the crossroads and small attention gave to landmarks on the journey from the cradle to the grave. Cradle to the grave, cradle to the grave.
Did you learn to dream in the morning?
Abandon dreams in the afternoon.
Wait without hope in the evening.
Did you stand there in the traces and let them feed your lies? Did you trail along behind them wearing blinkers on your eyes? Did you kiss the foot that kicked you? Did you thank them for their scorn? Did you ask for their forgiveness for the act of being born? Act of being born, act of being born. Did you alter the face of the city?
Make any change in the world you found?
Or did you observe all the warnings?
Did you read the trespass notices? Did you keep off the grass? Did you shuffle off the pavement just to let your betters pass? Did you learn to keep your mouth shut? Were you seen and never heard? Did you learn to be obedient and jump to at a word? Jump to at a word? Jump to at a word?
Did you ever demand any answer?
The who and the what and the reason why?
Did you ever question the setup?
Did you stand aside and let them choose while you took second best? Did you let them skim the cream off and then give to you the rest? Did you settle for the shoddy and did you think it right to let them rob you right and left and never make a fight? Never make a fight, never make a fight.
What did you learn in the morning?
How much did you know in the afternoon?
Were you content in the evening?
Did they teach you how to question when you were at the school? Did the factory help you grow? Were you the maker or the tool? Did the place where you were living enrich your life? And then did you reach some understanding of all your fellow men, all your fellow men, all your fellow men?
So we have on the line with us now Attorney Catnip Kate Wells, another person who knows well about the Jerry Henry case. She's been keeping a close eye on it. Hi, Kate.
Hi there.
And so the last thing we heard from Richard Quigley was that Henry was arrested apparently for failure to appear at a Friday morning court appearance where his attorney, Susan Jakubowski, he had contacted her early in the day, hadn't heard from her there was any such hearing, actually asked to have a hearing scheduled on Tuesday.
Right.
Richard Quigley called Jakubowski at 4:45, left messages for her. He learned that she had picked up her messages, but inexplicably, she hasn't gotten in touch with Quigley or any other friends of Jerry Henry. Yeah. Perhaps you've heard from this Susan Jakubowski.
Well, no, but when I heard what had transpired, she's not on that other case. She obviously hasn't been assigned. It's probably the arraignment for this other case. So it's not, it's not a matter of her dropping the ball on this situation.
There's still another case? That
yeah. See, he was arrested that Monday and held on $2,500 bail by Barton.
Which was up to $25,000.
The second case was the $25,000 and then up to $100,000.
Okay.
But what we finally determined is that this was the arraignment date that he was given on that first case.
I see.
That's what I assume. Now, clearly his thought was that the two cases had been combined.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly it was my impression as well after having attended the OR hearing and arraignment for him on the second charge, they certainly included it in that hearing. So it seemed to me like they had been combined as well. So
perhaps he'll give a quick call to Judge Morris and ask her to quash the warrant.
Yeah, it's again, $100,000 for a failure to appear? I could understand
We try to uphold a high standard of justice here in San Francisco.
Jerry has never failed to appear for anything. He actually looks forward to these court hearings. So, there's absolutely no earthly reason why, to impound his car and impound his dog when there are people standing right there ready to take his car and his dog.
Mm-hmm.
Did Richard explain about what happened with the dog?
He said that... That young Jeff,
Jeff,
what's his last name?
Hickey
actually chained himself to the fence to make sure that he got that dog out, and said sometimes it takes direct action to get some direct results. Now, I understand judges can be reached by the prosecution. Can the defense reach them? Can you reach Heather Morris?
Well, I have some of the judges' personal numbers, but I don't think I have hers. And I'm not sure if that's, I haven't, I think there's a judge on call that over the weekends and in the evenings, there's a certain, somebody will be on call.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly the prosecutors have them so that they can get warrants.
Have you tried that route yet? And I know you're not his attorney in this matter, but I know you're a friend of his.
Yeah.
Have you tried to contact this judge?
No. No.
Is it a difficult thing to do? Is there a reason why we have to try to reach him?
Well, if there's a failure to appear, certainly a warrant can issue. The fact that it's $100,000 is certainly...
He could call to get the bail reduced.
Outrageous, but not something that I can convince any... obviously she was convinced to do it in the first place, and that's something that...
I see.
...is not going to happen... just because I call her and tell her I think it's outrageous,
mm-hmm.
So...
Maybe if every Free Radio Santa Cruz person calls and tells
her. Yeah, it's hard to say.
Just kidding, folks. Mm-hmm. We don't want to get those judges too upset.
No.
After all, they control the the judicial machinery. You also have been... I'm gonna move from this case. You said you also might be going to see Jerry Henry today in jail.
I doubt it. I'm not going to be able to make it because he's up for arraignment tomorrow morning, there.
Right. But you also have a case of an individual who, a fellow named Steve, who was mm-hmm. taken to, who said, please take me to a magistrate,
mm-hmm.
and instead they took him to jail and booked
mm-hmm.
him,
mm-hmm.
and now he's trying to get that charge dismissed.
Right.
But the public prosecutor, Marijuana Masher Maraganda, as I call it.
Maraganja, or...
Maraganja, right.
Marijuana, or whatever.
Marijuanderer. the man who hates food servers or marijuana smokers worse, or at least lets himself be used in the capacity that punishes both those groups.
Yeah.
He went into court with you, and we heard from Richard Quigley that he's using a novel defense, which is that, though take me to a magistrate may be a basic civil right, it is an inconvenient one.
Unworkable, which at which point I told the judge that I had several criminal defendant clients who would love to know that defense would work, you know, because there's several of these laws that are unworkable for them as well.
The new unworkable defense.
Right.
It's unworkable,
right.
Therefore you can't do it, right?
Yeah, well, there are a couple of interesting things about this, and the case is dragged out long enough at this point that the six-month period for him filing a claim with the county passed, so he had to go ahead and file that claim with the county.
Now, we're talking about an underlying charge of some minor vehicle violation, or...?
Oh, yeah, it's a vehicle registration, driver's license, insurance, which all of which he had, but which he wanted to show to a magistrate.
Not to the officer.
And not to his accuser, right? I mean, he had the right to be able to see to show this. That's the whole purpose of this law.
What was the reason that he was stopped? Just
registration.
The officer claimed his tags weren't current?
Uh-huh.
I see.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And this is out in front of his place of business, which is a computer company, and at which point, when he not only asserted his right to go to a magistrate, he handed the officer, a Santa Cruz PD officer, a whole sheet explaining what the law was, outlining all of the code sections that were relevant, and even handed him a copy of the code sections themselves, which he had pre-prepared. And at which point the officer kind of threw up his hands and called his sergeant, who was our beloved Sergeant Crane.
Oh, dear. That's Sergeant...
Andy.
Toss Silva into the pillar,
toss
Crane.
Silva into
Sergeant Crane is currently being... I guess he's being sued in court for...
Right.
Injuries to activist David Silva from a 1996 protest where Silva wasn't protesting,
right.
But apparently Crane was acting as though he was, and he threw him out of the city council chamber,
right.
At a time when Silva was a candidate for city council.
Exactly.
Throwing him into a cement concrete pillar. And
so my client tried to explain it to Crane, and Crane basically heard a little bit and threw up his hands and said, "I've heard enough." Turned around, and he cuffed him, and they took him to jail.
Mm-hmm.
At which point, they took away from him his petition for habeas corpus, which was in his backpack, and he was held for over 8 hours in jail, booked, fingerprinted, all of those things, which are completely illegal and in violation of his rights. This, by the way, happened at 10 o'clock. He was arrested at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday morning, which, of course, there wasn't indeed a magistrate available.
But that would have been unworkable.
Well, that is what Paul Maraganda had to say in court. He said, just imagine, Judge Danner, if you know, in addition to this busy schedule that you already have this morning, you would have all these people coming in here, you know, expecting to have probable cause hearings because of some minor vehicle infraction. That that was his argument. But the other interesting thing is that somehow Paul Maraganda found out about the civil lawsuit or the civil claim that he had made, and he attached that to his opposition to my motion.
So he said, don't worry about the law, but look what you're going to have to pay if you find in the wrong direction.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, an absolutely outrageous thing to do. He admitted, when I showed my outrage in court, he admitted it wasn't relevant at all, and just told the judge to just disregard it. But there could be no possible reason for him to attach the civil claim other than to prejudice the judge.
And to say, you better, if you know where your bread's buttered,
that's
you better
right.
watch out because the
that's
money's
right.
going to be squeezed out of this county.
And nor would there be any reason for him to even know about this if county council hadn't jumped in and gotten involved.
Well, county council got a good drubbing from Richard Quigley in our last interview.
Yeah.
He doesn't think too much of Dwight.
What's
his name? Dwight.
Her.
Dwight Her. I know that I got a rather sad decision from him last spring when he ruled that sleeping in your vehicle was illegal only if you're a motorist motoring through. But if you're a homeless person living around here, forget it. Thank you, Dwight. So
So at any rate, that was his argument. So so Judge Danner is now trying to decide whether or not he's going to have to follow the law or succumb to the political pressures of the county council's office.
Oh, is there any question if it's follow the law or follow the money? What are you going to do? I think we know what that
is. Well, you know, at this point, he's in trouble because, you know, we're clearly going to take it on up. There's so much case law right on point that we'll take it on up on a writ of mandate. And he'll be reversed. And what the county has done now is implicate themselves in this whole scheme of violating people's rights.
County. Come on. You must be talking about another county.
And I don't know if Richard mentioned this, but when he asked the Sheriff's Department for their policy with regard to 40302, subsection C, which is take me to a magistrate, they responded that they had none.
Well, they're a relatively young department. Give them a few years.
So that combined with the fact that county council is obviously getting involved in criminal cases now, it shows that there's a pattern in practice, and it's custom and policy to violate people's rights. And
we like to think of it as helping out the county's financial problems.
Exactly. Yeah. I was so dumbfounded when I first read this opposition, looking at this, going, we can't comply with the law because it's too expensive. Basically,
they're trying to be fiscally prudent.
I just went, oh, okay. Actually, gosh, that's a novel defense.
Well, also, I think that may lie behind, to some extent, the $100,000 bail. That's one way of, you know, getting a little extra funds for the county in the case the jury, you know, skips or gets taken away.
Yeah, right.
We're talking to attorney Kate Wells. Kate, you're also going to be, I guess you're planning to come down to the Citizens Police Review Board tomorrow at 5:30.
Yep.
And you've been researching the issue of
resisting an unlawful arrest,
which means, I guess, not standing up and going along with the officer and saying, oh yes, officer, take me into custody for
right, going limp,
whatever,
anything but aggressively resisting arrest. Mm-hmm. Would be not a violation of the law.
There is a section of the law, though, you found that says you have a duty not to resist an arrest, even an unlawful one. I don't know who put that one in the code, but
yeah, it's one of those things that slipped in there without anybody. It's an odd thing because there's really no punishment for it, other than the fact that if you are guilty of assault and battery, you would still be guilty of an assault and battery. It's just that it wouldn't be under the special code section that is an assault on a police officer.
Now, wait a minute. Does this mean that if somebody comes, say, an individual in a blue outfit with a gun on his hip comes and says, okay, I'm arresting you for being Jewish, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this could have happened in the 30s, let's
mm-hmm.
say.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, wait a minute, I'm trying to table for petitions here. I'm not going with you.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, turn around, put your hands on your, and he slams you down on the table, and you shove him back.
Mm-hmm.
Say, get off of me. I am trying to do my business here. That act of shoving him could still be charged as a battery or an assault and effectively prosecuted?
Yes.
So you're saying that anybody else who came up to you and acted in this sort of a hate crime fashion
mm-hmm.
would be subject to the penalties of the law. Not only is the officer not subject to the penalties of the law, but you can be
mm-hmm.
charged
yep.
for simply using reasonable force to defend
yep.
yourself?
And that's how sorry the state of the law is right now. It really is. Anybody who has any doubts about whether or not we live in a police state, all you need to do is look at that and realize. I can give you cases on and on and on where this is happening. You know, for instance, you're not allowed to carry any kind of a weapon. I mean, even if it's just a piece of a stick or something in your own car, and yet every one of, I mean, the code section about that goes on for pages and pages of all the things you can't have, right? And with each one, it has the exception, except for a security guard or a cop. So they're, you know, basically we're arming them and disarming us.
Well, perhaps what we need to do is establish our own security guard associations.
Well,
so if we're all security guards,
hey, that's you know, it, this is...
It seems, though, that that's interesting. I mean, I wonder if that has ever been done. I'm not that I'm a... I myself don't believe in the use of weapons. I'm not a weapon user, but I also believe in the right to have a weapon.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's an interesting question. So, Kate, you're also going to be taking a case from one of your favorite suspects, mm-hmm. for sitting on the base of the Tom Scribner statue outside the bookshop Santa Cruz and not moving when an officer said, "Don't sit there."
Yeah.
Why are you letting yourself be involved in these trivial, petty disputes?
Well, obviously, this is symbolic of the larger issue of this police state that we have. I'm also going to be there on Tuesday arguing against the shoulder tap ordinance that has been proposed that will, you know, find a new way of making criminals out of our children who just are children.
You must have read that fine flyer put out by Students to Stop the Criminalization of Youth.
I haven't actually. I haven't actually read that. This is my own thoughts on it. You know, if we had been under a microscope and our actions had been controlled to this degree that they're trying to control now, I mean, we all would have major records for. I mean, it's absolutely insane.
Let me read the it's very short. Let me read the text of the law, and you can comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
The text of the law is an ordinance the City of Santa Cruz adding section 9.12.040 to the municipal code pertaining to minor solicitation of alcoholic beverage purchases.
Mm-hmm.
And section 9.12.040 is hereby added to the municipal code to read as follows. Minor solicitation of alcoholic beverages purchases. A. It is unlawful for any minor, i.e. any person under the age of 21 years, whether on public or private property, to solicit another person to purchase or to furnish an alcoholic beverage for the minor from an off-sale alcohol retailer. Mm-hmm. And then it adds, and sections B and C say, this section shall not apply to a minor solicitation of another person for the purchase of an alcoholic beverage from an on-sale alcoholic retailer, mm-hmm. nor to a minor's actual or attempted direct purchase of an alcoholic beverage from an alcoholic retailer. And those other two sections, as I take it, simply mean there are more severe penalties,
mm-hmm.
if you attempt to go buy, you know, get someone to buy you a drink in a bar or buy some beer yourself.
Again, the government is making a concerted effort to, as I see it, dissolve any shred that's left of our feelings of brotherhood and sisterhood, and I do think that is a concerted effort.
This means that if you ask your father to buy you a beer, the act not of asking
it's
him is
it's
itself
punishable.
Criminal behavior.
That's right.
Now
that's
it's
insane.
Now, it's also true that there is no clear description of whether it's an infraction or misdemeanor.
Yeah.
Chief Belcher at the hearing held about a month ago said it was going to be an infraction.
Well, it's the whole system of saying, you know, I no longer have to say to the person in front of me in line who's smoking, for instance, could you please step out of line? I'm allergic to smoke. I'll save your place. Now we just call the cops. You know, it's that attitude that we don't have to cooperate with each other anymore because we'll just make a law and call the cops. You know, and it's our solution for everything.
But this isn't even. I think this is somewhat different because, you know, there might be some. You can argue, well, people smoking in line, they're assholes, they blow it in your face, you have asthma, you know, what's your solution, you know, other than mm-hmm. leave the line, and so you want to get some kind of satisfaction, and the claim there is...
No.
But I know you don't buy that, but let me point out the difference with this law. This shoulder tap law that's coming up, by the way, at 3:30 on Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
day after tomorrow, at mm-hmm. City Hall, and I encourage everyone to come down and just say no to this law.
Right.
Although the mayor will not let you speak. She's closed the public hearing.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not.
Right.
So if people want to speak on this issue, what they should do is they should call 420-5020. 420-5020. That's the City Council's 24-hour line. And ask her to, one, reconsider the measure for the reasons that I think, Kate, you've got good reasons on this, but I have my own I'm going to talk
mm-hmm.
about.
Mm-hmm.
But also reopen the public hearing.
Right.
This was, I mean,
right.
they have not held a public hearing, for instance, at the university campus, which this
right.
will impact in a
right.
major way.
Yeah.
And that one of the main concerns is that, you know, this, who is hurt by one person saying to another person, will you buy me
yeah.
a beer?
Yeah.
Now, it's you might argue, well, if a person buys, if the guy actually gets the beer, then
that's a crime in and of itself.
But that is currently a crime.
Right.
You don't need
right.
to make an, have
exactly.
an additional criminal sanction.
Right.
You might argue that, you know, maybe there's, you know, it's... well, I mean, that is the basic thing, I think. The other thing is that this talks about an act of speech. This
yeah,
is an act of speech.
Right.
It criminalizes
right.
simply asking
yeah.
another person to get you a beer.
Yeah.
So if I say to my college roommate, I'm
mm-hmm.
20, he's 21, give me a beer, and
mm-hmm.
somebody else is listening who has a grudge,
right.
they can
right.
say, that's an infraction,
yeah.
I'm gonna go to court and testify,
yeah.
you're history, man.
Yeah, yeah. It's like I said, to me it's symbolic of a much larger issue, and that is that, you know, if you just don't like what somebody else does, then you go and you get a majority together and you petition the government and they make a law against it.
This is one of for
that
your
is
own.
That yeah. is what's happening, you know, with this. I have to say I'm outraged by everything that's happening with this new borders thing, and I see this as just another example of people being so short-sighted they don't understand that this kind of protectionist attitude that the government says we don't know how to take care of ourselves, so they'll take care of us. You know, the people aren't dumb. You know, if people don't want borders there, they won't shop there, and it'll go away. And if they do shop there, then it is wanted, and it should stay. You know, I don't give a damn what anybody says. It's you know, this is absolute. And you know, the other thing I see it as being elitist in the worst sense of the word. What happens to the poor people who can't afford to shop at Bookshop Santa Cruz? You know, what about an alternative for them? I see.
And the Borders Appeal is also on the, I believe it's the 3:30 or could be the evening agenda on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a hot session on Tuesday night.
Yeah. Well, I find myself at odds with almost all of my friends on this, but that's, you know, I am a civil rights attorney, and I, you know, my hero was Francis Heisler, who represented the Nazis so they could march in Skokie, even though his family died in the Holocaust.
I remember old
you
Francis.
Know?
He's from Carmel.
Absolutely.
That's
he was
right.
my constitutional law professor in law school, and he was foresighted enough to see that the erosion of anyone's rights is erosion of my rights, and I see this as you know, it's so clear that this is happening.
Well, getting back to the shoulder tap law.
Yes.
I mean, I know you have a broader objection, which I don't. I'm trying to kind of go specifically at this ordinance,
right, right.
where I think you and I and probably all your friends agree that since it's already a crime to buy liquor if you're a minor, or for an adult to buy you liquor, or for a youth to successfully solicit. An adult to go buy liquor. When the liquor reaches, I guess when the liquor is purchased, then it becomes a crime now, and
right.
that's a misdemeanor crime, I suppose.
Right. Right.
So there are already adequate penalties for dealing with this. Now,
definitely.
Chief Belcher came up with a whole bunch of, well, I would call it bullshit, frankly, but he had his different reasons for presenting this law, supported by Ron Ruiz, our fine new district attorney, as well as a bunch of other. Supporting cast of characters, and they were something to the effect of, oh, you know, the dangers of alcohol, and now, of course, we hear the same thing about the dangers of drugs, and I would say alcohol is probably a much more lethal drug than any illegal drug you can name, for which penalties, of course, are hundreds of times greater than for purchasing alcohol. But we also know that alcohol prohibition did not work.
Right. Just like drug prohibition.
Right. Just like drug prohibition does not work either.
Right.
But
now,
I suppose there's an argument that says, and even those who favor, let's say, ending drug prohibition for adults, make a caution and say, I do not favor ending drug prohibition for youth.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how I stand on the issue of prohibiting drugs for minors. I'm not clear about that. But I am clear about making it criminal to tap someone on the shoulder and ask them for a beer is bullshit.
It's carrying it to a step that is so
it is
outrageous.
A form of police expansion of police powers that to me is it doesn't deal with the real issue. It's like you're diverting resources
into. Of course
into
not. It's like when I was on the school board, one of the proposals was to outlaw whatever the gang colors were, so the kids couldn't wear those colors. I mean, you know, it's putting a Band-Aid on such a chasm of problem that first of all doesn't deal with why the kid wants the alcohol in the first place. You know, all of the reasons. It's again taking a health problem, making it a police problem.
So I remind listeners, if you want to have this issue really debated, you got to ask the mayor to reopen the public hearing and do that by calling 420-5020 today and saying, please, I didn't get a chance to talk on this issue. I wasn't able to get down to the high school where you held the last hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, in a way, I'm glad that they went to the high school, but the place they really got to go to are to the college campuses, where they get booed out of the whole area if they tried this kind of bullshit, because it makes criminals out of thousands of people. You know, who do this, you know, and it's not that drinking a beer is the best thing in the world for you or the worst thing in the world for you, but certainly asking for a beer does not hurt anybody at all.
Yeah.
I mean, so this is the distinction I draw between, let's say, smoking in line. Smoking in line conceivably could hurt somebody else who's asthmatic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's the best thing to do, I agree with you, is to say, excuse me, I'm asthmatic. Can you take that somewhere else? And any reasonable person would say sure. But at least there is an action going on that requires a concern for one reason or another.
Mm-hmm.
The act of my saying to a second person, buy me a beer, even if I'm a 5-year-old, is irrelevant unless the person walks down and starts to buy a beer.
Yes.
That becomes criminal behavior.
Yep.
That
yep.
makes some sense.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
I don't follow it. I think we just got to give that 420-5020 call and, you know, tell them, forget
please,
it.
Please, yes, do that. I got to go.
Hey, we've been talking to Attorney Kate Wells. Thank you very much.
Okay, not a problem.
See you at the CPRB at 5:30.
At 5:30 tomorrow.
In City Council Chambers.
Oh, where is it, by the way?
In City Council Chambers.
Oh, okay.
Right where the City Council usually meets.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Bye. Bye.
And that was Attorney Kate Wells. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Our phone lines are finally open. I apologize for kind of roaming all over the map and not giving those of you who may have some expressions of indignation, concern, or whatever regarding Jerry Henry, regarding the shoulder tap, regarding other issues that have been raised to call in and speak. But you certainly now have that opportunity if you'd like. And the call-in number is 427-3772. You're invited to call into Free Radio and add your voice to this dialogue. In fact, here's somebody who's doing that right now. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. How are you? Bernard?
Hey, the infamous activist with Mumia, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.